This is episode 85 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world. Peter Irish is one of the most creative guys I've met. Not only does he juggle with his hands and his feet, he creates visual art and is looking forward to his own art show. He's making a version of a tarot card deck. He's traveling through Italy, getting inspired by the spectacular art that is Italy. He's even practicing a musical instrument. Holy moly! In today's interview, Peter shares with us his own special ways of staying creative. Enjoy the show!
Fun fact number 829. John used to light his hands on fire before a big swimming race to freak out his competitors.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
My guest today is a legend in the variety arts. Six world championships and an award of innovation in juggling have taken Pete's feats of comedy around the planet. Variety artist, I give you world champion hacky sacker Peter Irish.
Hey, John.
What's going on, Peter?
Oh, man. I'm hanging out here in Rome.
You're in Rome right now? What are you doing in Rome?
Good question. I'm not exactly sure what I'm doing in Rome. At the moment, I'm trying to learn as much Italian as I can in a very short period of time.
Oh.
Parlo un po' di Italiano.
What is that?
That means I speak a little bit of Italian, not much.
Is that the extent of it right there?
Le capisce l'inglese. That's my most used phrase, which means, do you speak English?
Oh.
With a close second. Dove le toilette?
And that's where I got the toilette.
Yeah. Where's the toilet? Beyond that, I'm working on it. Yeah, I'm having a blast out here in Europe. Been in Rome for just a couple days.
Mm.
Came down from Calabria, which is in the south of Italy, right around the boot, right around the toe of the boot. And I was on the most beautiful beach, one of the most beautiful beaches I've ever seen in my life, a town called Tropea. The water was crystal clear, blue-green aqua water, warm. It was like, 80 degrees out there still. Off season, not very many tourists, so I had a lot of the beach to myself, and I was just swimming on the beach for the last month, chilling out.
Wow.
Bit of a change coming to Rome from southern Italy, but it's exciting. Really, really happy to be here.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's my first time. I mean, it's mind-blowing. In 3 days, I've probably walked 20 miles and seen more exciting things than I've seen in the last 5 years, probably in 3 days. So it's a little overwhelming, but in a good way.
Well, let's talk about your hacky sack career then.
Sure.
I got to tell you this story. The first time I ever saw a hacky sack, I was a competitive swimmer when I was a kid. And there was a guy on our swim team who went to South Africa to compete in open water swim. So he comes back and he has this little bag of beans thing. And he goes, I said, what is that? And he goes, it's a hacky sack. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, it's a hacky sack. What you do is you kick it and you juggle it with your feet like this. And he shows me and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. So sure enough, for the rest of the school year, all we did was hacky sack all year long.
Yeah, I can relate.
With a little hacky sack bag.
Nice. So what year was that?
That was 1981.
Those are the golden ages of hacky sack, early 80s. That's when I got into it. I got into it in 1982.
Oh, okay.
It's wild because I was not aware that they were playing hacky sack in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I knew, it was just in America. Of course, the concept of hacky sack goes back for several thousand years, and many different cultures have their own version of it. It's interesting for me to hear that you discovered it from someone who brought it back from South Africa. That's pretty cool.
That is cool. I think it was probably popular in different parts of the world, maybe before it came to the United States, right?
Well, technically, it was invented, the game of hacky sack as we know it today around the world, if it's even known around the world anymore, was invented in Portland, Oregon, I believe in 1972.
Oh.
It's a specifically American version of it. I guess it's an ancient kicking game. I mean, most cultures have some kind of version of it. Most of them have a different kind of object, but the beanbag version that we know today was born in Portland, as far as I know.
Okay.
So maybe the South Africans had their own version. I know the Chinese have a version called shuttlecock, which is still huge around Asia. You could probably find most cultures that have some kind of, you know, similar game.
Yeah. Now you started, did you say in 1982?
Yeah, I was given a hacky sack in 1982 by my dad because I was a soccer player back then. My dad gave me this hacky sack. He said, here you go. This will make your soccer better. And I just got obsessed with the hacky sack and quit playing soccer.
Oh,
is that kind of backfired from that. Yeah, I got totally obsessed when I was a kid. So I started when I was about 12 years old with the hacky sack. And I haven't stopped yet.
Well, yeah, you're amazing.
Thank you. I haven't really competed professionally. I retired from competition professionally in 2006, but I still play a lot, you know, and I perform it in my show. I maintain a good enough level of technical ability to impress people in my show, although I don't train for it like I used to. I used to be a maniac, 6 hours a day playing hacky sack for years on end.
Wow, I guess that's just like any juggling thing. You have to spend time to get good at it, right?
Yeah, it's all about practice, you know, and I'm also a professional juggler. So, and I learned juggling with my hands after I learned juggling with my feet, which allowed me to combine the two.
Well, at what point in time did you say, well, gosh, you know, I'm juggling this hacky sack and I'm doing amazing things with it. I think I might have something here to make a living at.
You know, I never really expected to make a living at it in the beginning. I just wanted to play hacky sack. I was an obsessed little kid. I was super introverted and a little bit socially awkward in those times, which was perfect for hacky sack because, you know, you just get to play with this little beanbag by yourself in a corner. For me at that time, it was perfect. And all I wanted to do is just play hacky sack. I got so good that I started competing in tournaments. And when I won the world championships, I met some people who were doing school shows. So I started doing school assembly shows with some other, another friend of mine named Scott Clear. He lives in Southern California somewhere. He had a thing called Creative Athletics, which was a school assembly show that he was doing, and he would book teams. And after I won the world championships, he came up to me and he's like, you want a job playing footbag? Or they called it footbag.
Yeah.
Technically, that's the name. And I said, oh yeah, I want a job. So that's how it started for me with school shows.
Now, were you doing school shows in Southern California?
No, I did school shows in the East Coast and the Midwest.
Okay. I was going to say, we've probably done some of the same schools because that's my jam. That's what I do. I do school shows. I do elementary school shows.
I doubt our paths have crossed down there. I've never done any shows in Southern California, but all over the East Coast.
No, I didn't even know they had competitions for that. How did you find out about that?
The first time I found out about a competition, well, I got my first hacky sack I ever got had this little booklet in it. And it said, you know, send us a dollar and we'll send you the Hacky Sack magazine, which, believe it or not, there's a Hacky Sack magazine.
See, there's a whole world that I don't know about.
Yeah, man, it's a huge world. They had a magazine. It doesn't get any bigger. But I got that magazine. I looked in the magazine, and I found that 8 hours from where I was, there was a Hacky Sack tournament. And at this point, I had been playing for a while. I thought I was pretty good. You know, I could kick the Hacky Sack at that point. I think by the time I thought about going to a hacky sack competition, I could kick a hacky sack 5,000 times in a row without dropping it.
Wow.
That's how obsessed I got as a kid. I thought no one could do that. There's no way anyone could kick a hacky sack more than 5,000 times. Like, I'm going to go to this tournament and just destroy everyone, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to come out of nowhere and I'm going to be the king of the hacky sack world. And I was like 16 at the time, 15, I think. And so I begged my parents, man, I got to give my parents credit, and it's all their fault, really, because my dad gave me my first hacky sack, and then he drove me 8 hours to this competition, you know?
And you're convincing him the whole way, I'm going to win this thing, it's hands down, piece of cake.
Oh, man, I was talking so much smack. I'm like, oh, you guys can watch me just go in and destroy from nowhere, like, I'm going to come out of nowhere, you know, and people are just going to worship me.
Yeah.
I got there, you know, and rolled up on the first morning, I was so excited. First thing I notice is like everyone there is like they're giving each other hugs and high fives and like everyone knows everyone, right? They're all friends, obviously, except me. That even kind of made me more excited because I'm like, I'm going to go in there as this unknown and just dominate. And I walk up on the scene and this dude starts kicking a hacky sack And he catches it on his foot. He throws it up. He goes around twice with his leg and kicks it again. And my entire universe dissolved in front of my eyes. I was like, oh my God, I suck at hack and sack. So yeah, the dream died in the moment there. But also the dream was really sparked because that's when I found out what you could actually do with the hacky sack. Mm. Before that, I didn't know there was even any tricks you could do. You know, I could just kick it. My whole world was blown open in that moment. Devastating and inspiring in the same moment.
Yeah, well, I love seeing stuff like that. I'm a magician myself, and I love seeing stuff I've never seen before because it opens up a whole new world. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, wait, if he can do that, what if I do this? Or what if I do this? Or what if I do this?
Yeah, it just shows you the possibilities. I think that's the key. You know, I was obsessed by just kicking the thing, which is, if you think about it, it's like the most boring thing you can possibly do. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it for hours a day. And then I realized what could be possible. And that's when I really fell in love with the game. Mm. That first weekend for me really just changed my whole life. And by the end of the weekend, I had whatever, I don't know how many people there, 50, 75 new friends. I couldn't walk. I was in so much pain.
I'm sorry. How did you do in the competition?
Oh, it was a disaster. You know, I was going actually the competition that I was competing in was the second day. So it was like a weekend thing. And my competition was to see how many times in a row you can kick the bag. And that's what I was going to go do and dominate. And then but I played so much hacky sack. I learned so much that first day. I must've played like 12 hours without stopping. I woke up the next morning, could barely move. I could barely walk, literally. Like, and I was a 16-year-old kid, you know, I could have taken anything, but my body was trashed. And so I think I managed to kick it about 1,000 times. And my dreams went down the tubes at that moment. In the bigger picture, it was more of a success.
How many times did the winner kick it?
The winner at that competition kicked 8,000 times, which at the time, you know, I was training every day. I was doing thousands of kicks every day. I mean, this wasn't just like, oh, I kicked the 5,000 times and I did it once. I was obsessively kicking a hacky sack for hours a day. So I probably, had I gone in there and not touched the hacky sack and just waited for the competition, I might have been able to beat that. Mm. Eventually, I did 10,000. That's my personal record.
Oh.
And then after I reached 10,000, I just said, okay, I really don't have to do this again ever.
Well, just so you know who you're talking to here, I think my world record is 7, I think.
7? Yeah. If you can do 7, you can do 27. If you can do 27, you can do 50. If you have the basics down and you wanted to, you know, you could do hundreds or thousands of kicks, but why would you want to?
Exactly. Why would I want to spend 8 hours a day doing that? I don't know.
You don't. Trust me, you really don't. And no one else listening to this does.
Well, I notice it's a real popular thing in colleges now, right?
I don't know. You know, I haven't been hanging out in many colleges. Overall, you know, the hacky sack, it peaked out in the 80s probably was its most popular. You know, it was a huge fad there in the 80s and the early 90s. It was really big. You know, hippies love it. And you can go to the Dead shows and, well, I guess the Dead's still around, Dead and Company. It's not the Grateful Dead anymore, but
yeah,
those guys still play. And you see it now and then, and people still know what it is, but the popularity is not what it used to be.
So I wonder if you're in a drug induced state to do hacky sack for hours on end.
Of course it helps. Of course, man. How else can it be interesting?
After 7 or 8.
Yeah, after 7 or 8, if you're not stoned, man, you're going to do something else. That being said, I was totally sober when I set my personal records, of course.
Of course. Now let's talk about your Hall of Fame. You were inducted in the Hall of Fame, I was reading?
Yeah. The Hacky Sack has a Hall of Fame, can you believe it? But I'm in there. Yeah, I'm in there. You know, everything has a competition and everything has a Hall of Fame now, I guess. Not to play it down, that's a big honor for me, you know. I mean, I devoted my life to the game. So within that community, to be honored with the Hall of Fame was a great thing. I'm not trying to play it down because, you know, some of my heroes are in that. I respect the people who have devoted their life to such an obscure game as that, like myself.
That's a pretty big deal.
I am a proud Hall of Fame member of the Footbag Hall of Fame, which resides in someone's closet somewhere, I think.
It's like Hacky Sacks, picture of you, some candles.
Yeah, they got a Polaroid of me in a box in a closet somewhere. I think. Fitting shrine to my career.
It has Peter's original Hacky Sack. It's just like a few threads and...
Yeah, it's molding in the corner.
And a bean.
Some beans, yeah. Some beans.
All right, well, let's talk about your travel. Now, recently, or I don't know if it was recently, you tell me, you basically sold all your stuff and decided to travel for months. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I made a radical change. It was a great idea. I think for me, you know, one of my main objectives in life is to stay creative. Strangely enough, this was maybe the most radical way to stay creative for me. You know, I've been living in Boulder, Colorado for a decade. Mm-hmm. Do a lot of street performing. I've always been a street performer. So kind of my home pitch was in Boulder, Colorado. And I worked that pitch for 10 straight years, man, 10 straight years. And
wow.
I had it wired. You know, I know what works in that spot. I know how much money I was going to make. My show worked really well. I had a pretty good amount of gigs that I would do regularly. I was really in a comfort zone. You know, for most people, that's a good thing. And for me, for a while, it was good. But, you know, I'm almost 50 now. I'm 49 years old. Mm-hmm. And I've been performing full time since 1993, I believe. So I've been in the game a long time. I kind of wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone, not only in my career, but just in life. Most people thought we were crazy to do that. My wife and I were both into really pushing our creative boundaries. She's as crazy as I am. And really, we both said, hey, let's do something crazy. And so we literally moved out of our place. We sold all our belongings, saved up some money, and we're just traveling the world right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Most people won't do that, but I think it was the best decision I've ever made. And we're just a month in, but you know, I've seen all kinds of differences in my life already and how I look at things and how I've changed my life radically. And another thing is, you know, I've been doing shows for so long. I really kind of wanted to try something new, to get out into Europe and busk, you know, some of the classic spots in Europe. I've always wanted to go street perform through Europe, you know, to do it at my age, at age 49, man, that's like, you know, it's good for me. It's good for me to stay on my toes. Get into some places where I don't even speak the language and to try something new and really to try to perform in a completely different context.
Now, are you living off money that you've saved, or when you run out of money, do you put the hat out?
So we got a little bit of money, you know, put aside. We've got a few months worth of places to stay, but I'm out here, you know, I've been in Rome for a week. I haven't done any shows for a month, but before that I was, you know, doing 3 or 4 shows a day for months on end. And I haven't stopped performing for years. I don't take much time off. So I'm always doing shows. And so really this is the first vacation I've had in years. Kind of why we went to the beach for a month, just to chill out, decompress. It was nice to take a month off of shows. I haven't done that and I don't even remember. I gave myself a little vacation and now that I'm in Rome, been here, I believe 4 days. I don't even know. They're all running together and there's so much to see. The entire time I'm walking around Rome, I'm looking at spots. I'm scoping pitches. Like, okay, I could work there. I could do shows here. And there's a bunch of them. I don't see anyone doing shows here in Rome.
Yeah.
I don't have a permit for Rome, and I don't even know if I need one. But next week, I'm going to go throw myself out and try some of those spots. So I'll be street performing wherever I can go. If I can do it, I'll be there. I'm hoping to make enough money to survive and keep it going, you know, we'll see. I'm sure I'll come back to the States eventually, probably maybe next summer.
I was going to ask about that permit thing.
Yeah.
Are you just going to throw out your hat and start performing? And then if someone comes and says, where's your permit? You'll say, hey, where can I get one?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know certain spots in Europe, you need permits and all that stuff. Rome, I don't know. I don't really know many people who have done many shows in Rome. You know, there's a lot of buskers here and there's a lot of musicians. It's mostly musicians, mm-hmm. A couple, you know, walk by statues, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And they're all using amps. Like, I'm not going to use Fire. I use a lot of Fire in my show back in the States. I downsized my show and I kind of went back to basics. So I'm doing all hacky sack, hands and feet juggling, really small version of my show with no danger. I won't have kids throwing knives. I won't be lighting chairs on fire, which is things that I do in my show back in the States. None of that. So I'm really pared it down. You know, everything that I need for my show fits pretty much in a backpack right now. So even if I get kicked out of one spot, I'll go to another and I'll see what happens, which is kind of part of the fun.
Well, that's smart. You just gather up your stuff, put it in your backpack and go to the next spot.
Yeah, I can break down real quick right now where it's nice and it's liberating because I used to carry around a bunch of crap. You know, I used to have a bunch of props, a table, chairs, all kinds of stuff, you know.
That's one of the reasons I stay in Southern California. I have a lot of stuff. I have to put it in my car and I have to drive to the gig, you know, exactly. As opposed to just putting it in my backpack. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done years of that, driving my car to gigs and hauling out all kinds of crap.
Yeah.
It's really fun now to, okay, I got my stuff in the backpack and I can break down real quick and go somewhere else. It's really back to basics for me, which is nice. It's forcing me to do things totally differently.
So how have you arranged to stay somewhere? Where are you staying during this?
I got an apartment right now in the Trastevere neighborhood, which is really the most fun, hip neighborhood in Rome. It's by far the coolest spot. And I'm right in the middle of it, man. It's crazy here. It's like a full-time party 24/7, which is fun. But, you know, I like to sleep, so it's a loud neighborhood. I'm working that out, but it's a cool place to be. You know, I'm an artist too. I'm a visual artist. I'm really into art these days. And so there's street art all over this place. And I'm running around taking pictures of street art. And I'm probably going to do some street art myself. So that's another part of the reason of maybe going why we picked Rome first is because of the art. Like, I'm here just to soak up the art and the culture of Rome. Yeah, right now I'm staying at an Airbnb.
Oh.
I got a better deal than my rent back in Boulder. I'm saving money being here in the middle of Rome, even on Airbnb. So,
well, Boulder, I looked at the rent in Boulder and Boulder is really high. I'm in Southern California. Southern California is high. Boulder is high.
It's almost the same. Yeah. It's one of the most expensive places in the country to live. So it's nice. It's refreshing being out of Boulder because being over here is way cheaper. And a rent, even on an Airbnb, rent is way cheaper and the food's cheaper. Everything's cheaper. So I'm actually saving money being in Europe, which is really a nice benefit.
And seeing all sorts of great stuff. Wow.
Yeah, man.
So ahead of time, are you looking online ahead of time to find the Airbnbs and the apartments and such? Or are you showing up and just going for it?
Yeah, no, we did some research and we set some stuff up for a few months before we got here. Maybe if I was in my 20s, I would just shown up and found a place. But, you know, nowadays, like, you know, it's nice to have a warm bed to come to get there and you know you at least have a place to stay. Yeah, I've got a few months worth of rent paid and set up. But beyond that, starting in January, I don't really have a plan. So
I was going to ask about that. What is next? Where is next?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out because one of the main deterrents of this whole thing is the fact that in Europe, at least, you only have 90 days without some kind of visa.
Okay.
So once you've done your 90 days, unless you get some kind of visa, work visa, student visa, something, then you have to leave Europe for 90 days and then you can come back.
Okay.
There's all these logistics in traveling the world. And so another consideration is we would rather not be somewhere cold.
True.
The whole inspiration for this trip, really the original inspiration, was last winter in Colorado in the middle of the winter. It was a long, hard, cold winter. We said to ourselves, we are not going to be in this snowy, cold winter next winter. We really want to be in a place that's warm and preferably cheap. We were thinking about maybe Morocco, maybe India, maybe Southeast Asia, places that are warm and cheap. I may not be able to work a lot out there, but those places are so cheap, I probably wouldn't have to work. Yeah, we're going on a little bit of a plan and a little bit of improvisation. So we've got 2 months to figure out our next move.
My daughter on November 12th is going to Thailand. she's 21 years old, and she comes and lives with me for 2 or 3 months, saves up money, and then goes to Thailand, India, and lives there for 6 months because it's so inexpensive.
Nice. And that's at 21. That's great, man. I wish I had done that at age 21. That's a good age to get out and do it.
Oh, 49 is a good age. Any age, I guess, is a good age.
Any age is a good age, no doubt about it.
Wait, do you have kids?
No kids.
Okay. See, that's part of it too. I think if you have kids, for me anyway, I stayed in a stable area until my kids moved out, and now I'm touring and doing all those different things that I can do now.
Yeah. Yeah. If we had kids, I don't think that we'd be doing this. We have very few actual responsibilities in life. So it's perfect.
Well, let's talk about your art then. I looked on your Facebook page and you do some amazing art. How do you continue with your art when you're there with just your backpack?
You know, I do a lot of collage and drawing. I just get my source materials wherever I am. You know, I carry a small bag of like my X-Acto blades and some scissors and some glue. You know, I buy up magazines and old books and cut them up and paste them. I'm actually carrying a big stack of art around with me. So that's one of the things that's sort of weighing me down, but it's not that much really. My stuff, I don't do huge pieces yet. It's really easy for me to do it wherever I'm at. So if I'm going to do some drawing, then I just sit down with a pad and, you know, I'll just buy it wherever I get it. So in the last couple of days, I've been scrambling and just, you know, buying up magazines and getting source materials. And so after walking around for 10 miles a day, I just come home and sit down and start cutting up magazines.
And you're probably more inspired in Italy than you are in Colorado, right?
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, for me, just, you know, walking around and seeing Bernini's and all the art that's here, just in public, like you don't even have to go to museums. It's like there's Michelangelo's out if you know where to find them. I mean, the sculptures and the architecture, everything in Rome is so decadent and it's so detailed. I mean, it's like the whole city is just a piece of art. It's astounding. It's like, you know, everywhere you look, it's just a piece of art. It's really starting to sink in real quick. And just being in this environment is definitely inspiring.
Anybody listening to this, if you want to take a look at some of Peter's art, go to www.secondtriangle.com. Is that right?
That's it. Secondtriangle.com. That's my art site. Also, My Instagram is @thepeterirish, which I post a lot of art up on my Instagram as well.
It's very inspirational. Just looking at your art this morning, I looked at a bunch of your art, and that in itself is very inspiring.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's one of my main passions in life. You know, I've been doing performing and juggling and performance art for so long. And, you know, I've been an artist since I was a kid, but really in the last couple of years, I started taking it a little more seriously with no agenda. I'm not trying to sell it, even though I do sell a fair amount of art, getting a lot of interest without even really trying. You know, if you do something that you love just out of pure joy of doing it, and you share it with someone, I think there's going to be an audience one way or another. And some of my art is weird, man. Some of it's like really avant-garde. Some of it's a little dark and strange, but people seem to like it. Really, I'm just doing it for myself, but I do it just because I love it.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme in your life with Hacky Sack. I mean, there you are sitting in the corner, 5,000 kicks of a Hacky Sack, and now you're doing your art. You're not doing that for anybody. You know, you're obviously doing it for yourself because it's fun, right?
Yeah. And my whole life is based around that. It's just, you know, I just do what I love to do. I have a lot of passions for a lot of different things. I study full time this Japanese instrument called the shakuhachi flute. It's a bamboo flute. And will I ever perform this bamboo flute in front of people? Will I ever even play it? Probably not. But I just love playing it. I love the music. I love the history, the culture behind that instrument. I do what I love. When I feel like it's good enough, then maybe I'll share it with other people. But even if I don't, I'll still do it.
All right, let's switch gears a bit. Let's do fact or something John just made up. Does that sound like fun?
Yeah, let's do it.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
You got it.
All right, here we go. First headline. Peter's wife talks to dead people.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Is it true? Oh, wait a minute here. You got to tell me about that.
All right. Well, my wife is a full-time psychic.
Oh, okay. So okay.
That's how she makes her living. She's got a very big clientele. They love her. Do you believe in psychic phenomenon? Some people do, some people don't. Am I trying to tell you that it exists? All I can say is I've seen some very strange things, and I've seen my wife do very weird stuff and tell people things that there's no way she could have known it. So, I mean, for the full story, you'd probably have to talk to my wife. That's what she does, man. She's a full-time psychic. She can talk to dead people.
How is she doing that when you're traveling around?
She works mostly over the phone, so her clients do. They just call her. That's another reason why this works so well for us, is that she can work anywhere in the world, really, as long as she has her phone.
Oh, that's great. And if someone wants to look up her website, what would that be? Do you know?
It's psychickate.com.
And how do you spell that?
PSYCHICCATE.com. And believe me, Kate is the best psychic that I know. So if you need psychic advice, man, you cannot go anywhere else.
Now, I noticed on your Facebook that there are some tarot cards that made. Did you design those?
Yeah, I'm currently designing a tarot deck myself.
Are you working with your wife in that, or?
Not really, although she's like an expert. She's a master at the tarot. I'm around this stuff all the time. And it's nice because I've always had an interest in these subjects as well.
All right, we're going to go to the next one.
Okay.
Peter designs album covers for musicians around the world.
Well, yes, indeed. And that just fits into our current conversation about art.
Are there any musicians that I know of?
No. They're all obscure underground musicians mostly. But if you're into the Norwegian dark ambient scene, you might know a few of them. Or,
of course, that's a scene I hang around with all the time, you know.
Yeah, I thought I saw you at a few of those shows, John. But that's the kind of music I like, though. I'm working with musicians that I really like, and I tend to like really obscure, weird stuff. So I know the musicians that I'm working with, but you probably wouldn't, and our wonderful listeners probably wouldn't have heard any of them.
Oh, that's okay. All right, next one. Peter has taught three different presidents how to foot juggle.
Obviously, that's true. No, that's false. That's false.
That'd be cool, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they wouldn't let me in the White House.
I'd like to see video of like Obama or Trump, you know, or Obama playing with Trump. Hacky sack.
yeah, that would be interesting.
That'd be something.
It would be a battle, hacky sack battle.
All right, last one. Peter has performed on stage in nothing but saran wrap in front of 30,000 people.
Indeed, that's true. Maybe even less than saran wrap.
Tell me about that.
Oh, man. Well, you know, when you're starting out in the business, you take whatever gigs come to you, man. You know, when you need to pay rent, when rent is due in 2 days and you have no idea where that money is coming from, perhaps you too would juggle naked on stage in front of 30,000 people.
What does the contract say? Does the contract say, hey, you have to juggle in front of a bunch of people almost completely naked?
I'm pretty sure there was no contract for that gig, John. That was just like, yeah, I'll do it. Let's do it. Oh, tomorrow night? All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. I'll show up.
Oh, man, I did all kinds of weird gigs. Because I started my career in San Francisco in the early 90s. And so that was one of the many gigs I did in that neighborhood of performing. Mm-hmm. We could discuss more of that, but, you know, I'll leave it to the viewer's imagination.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
That's going to take us into some fan questions. You have two fan questions from your buddy, Matt Baker. You want some fan questions?
You know, I'm really just happy that I at least have one fan in the world. And it's Matt Baker, man. That dude. I'm a fan of Matt Baker, too, so it goes both ways.
Well, there you go. All right. I'm going to ask you Matt's question. Matt Baker, for those that don't know, is a stand-up comedian and co-host of the Odd and Offbeat podcast. Take a listen to that. It's great. He co-hosts that with Louis Fox. Really fun.
Great guys. Great podcast. Matt's hilarious. He's got a great show. Highly recommended. Good old friend of mine.
All right. He asks, or he says, ask him about juggling naked in Japan without saran wrap, I guess.
I think Matt got that mixed up. You know, I have performed in Japan, but not naked in Japan.
Okay.
And I have performed naked, but not naked in Japan.
Okay. Well, let's go back then. Tell us about some naked performing stories.
Well, the saran wrap one was one of them. I mean, eventually the saran wrap just, you know, you're in the middle. Your passing club was saran wrap, and it just, you know, you're sweating up there in front of 30,000 people. The saran wrap doesn't really stick. So advice to new performers, if you're going to use saran wrap, don't expect the saran wrap to stay on. It just doesn't. But I did a few other gigs, you know, back in the early days in San Francisco where I had to perform without clothing and they paid my rent. Sure, I'm not the only performer out there who's done that. I'm sure I'm not the only performer who will do that. So I'm not recommending it. However, I don't regret it. It was a good time.
Yeah. I'm in a lot of Facebook magician chat places, you know, groups and things. Every once in a while, a magician will say, hey, day after tomorrow, I have a show at a nudist colony and I'm doing it in the nude. Can you give me some good ideas to do magic in the nude? Because you can't hide anything anywhere.
Yeah, right. You better be good.
Yeah, or not comfortably anyway. All right, we'll go to Matt's next question. He asked about the naked juggling in Japan, which we talked about, and he says, or Adam Sandler's crotch pad. Pardon the interruption. I know you're enjoying this amazing interview with Peter Irish, but this is a warning. The story you're about to hear is rated E for explicit. If you're easily offended by this sort of thing, fast forward past this story. You have been warned.
Well,
what does that mean?
Yeah, we can see where Matt's mind goes. Adam Sandler's crotch pad. That's a good story, man. Actually, that's one of my favorite stories of my career. So,
okay, give it to me.
Okay, so I worked on one of Adam Sandler's movies. Oh, probably none of you have seen it. It's called You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Oh, I have seen it, believe it or not.
Have you seen it? Yeah.
Yes.
So you'll know that there's hacky sack all over that movie, right? If you go back, I don't know if you remember that movie very much. I don't even remember it, but.
By the way, it's on Netflix right now as we speak.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. I only noticed that because I noticed it last night while looking around Netflix.
Go watch it, I guess, if you can get through it. Check it out. You might see a flash of my leg, but. Basically, I was a stunt double for Adam Sandler, and in the movie, his character does all this crazy hacky sack stuff, right? So I was really stoked, actually, to be able to work on this film. A bunch of my other friends worked on it as well, and it was kind of a big deal in the hacky sack community back when it was, I don't even remember, maybe the early 2000s or late 90s or something.
Okay.
My memory's a little cloudy, but... So I get the call and I go up to New York City and go hang with Adam, and Adam is a really cool guy. You know, he's get to hang with Adam. And so we go to the day of the shoot. It was just a one day shoot for me. They dress me up exactly like Adam Sandler's character in the movie. Pretty much done. Like I'm getting all the makeup done and everything. And I got my suit on and I look just like Adam Sandler in the movie. And the last piece is that the lady who is the costume ladies or whatever were like, okay, there's one more thing. And they hand me this giant crotch pad. And they're like, you have to put this in. Adam wants you to put this in. Like it has to, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, it's required. Adam's requiring you to wear this crotch pad, right? And so, okay. Like, all right, awesome, right? So I put this crotch pad in, so like, you know, it's pretty obvious, right? And I'm walking down.
So before we go on, this crotch pad, so you're looking at your pants and there's a big bulge coming out of your pants, is that right? Yeah, am I reading this right?
It, man, you can imagine what it, that's what you think it is—a crotch pad.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're stuffing it in there. So, you know, I guess Adam likes to look big on camera, I guess. But so I get to the shoot and I'm hanging out, and Adam rolls up. He comes up to me, stands next to me, and we look exactly the same. You know, we're in the same outfits. I got my makeup on, and it's got this little mustache beard, like this goatee thing going. And we're shooting and we're just talking, you know, and he kind of looks me up and down. He looks me up and down. He's like, damn, you know, you're in better shape than me. And I say to Adam, I say, yep, that's true. And my dick's bigger too. And so I think he cracked up. It was fun. I made Adam Sandler laugh at least once.
At least that's that. But, of course.
Adam was such a gentleman. That was a cool guy to work with. Great guy.
All right. Those are all the fan questions we have for right now. Do you have some advice for the beginner, someone who's just starting out?
Oh, man, I've got all kinds of advice for beginners.
Well, give us some advice for a beginner then.
My main advice for beginners, if you really want to make a living as a variety entertainer, if you really want to succeed in this business, try to find a mentor or someone who you can learn from. For my career, that was crucial. I started out as a little hacky sack kid. I did not know how to entertain an audience. I did not know what was even entertaining when I started. And I was lucky enough to meet some people early on who really gave me some guidance, pointed me in the right direction. Like, I got into performing just because I wanted to play hacky sack and I loved to juggle. That's all I wanted to do. And so I started performing because that was a way for me to make a living doing what I wanted to do. But at the time, I was really focused on technical ability and skill. And, you know, that'll only take you so far as a performer, you know? I mean, people will only watch a certain amount of tricks that they can't do for so long before getting bored. Most adults don't want to watch juggling, including myself, really. I mean, there's very little juggling out there that even excites me these days. Like, I don't want to sit and watch 30 minutes of juggling. That's the last thing I want to do. So I want to be entertained. I would say for the young kids coming up, like, really think about that and think about how you can make your skills entertaining. If you want to do comedy, like I do a comedy show, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast also do comedy. So, you know, I didn't start out a very funny guy. I had to learn how to be funny, or at least I had to learn how to write jokes. And so I studied comedy writing for a long time. I sat with a notebook and I did exercises and, you know, I had to work at it.
Louis Fox talks about writing every single day. He sits down and writes every single day. He writes jokes every single day. Some of them stick, some of them don't, you know, but the idea of writing every single day.
I agree with that, especially when you're starting. I think it's really important. And if you're not a natural comedian and you want to learn how to be funny, then you have to work at it. Writing every single day is good because it's like a numbers game. It's like you're going to write hundreds of bad jokes and then one or two of them will actually be funny. But if you get one or two funny jokes, and you write 100 more bad jokes and you get another couple jokes, all of a sudden you got a dozen jokes that are funny. That's a start. You really got to work hard. That's another thing about that I would say to beginners is, you know, you really have to work hard. You really have to want to do this. You really got to really want it to succeed as a variety entertainer and to get good. Another piece of advice I'd give to young performers is just, if you've got a show, then just do it. Find a place to work and work as much as you can. You know, you've got to suck for a long time before it really starts hitting. You know, give your opportunities to fail and fail and fail again and don't get discouraged. Eventually, if you work at it, things will start working. And the only way to figure that out is to work hard.
That's right. And the only way to figure it out too is in front of the live audience.
And you know, you can say your lines or, you know, do your show in the privacy of your own home, but that's a whole different story than getting out in front of people. So you really just got to be willing to fail a lot before you start getting good.
Cool. How about some advice for the working pro?
Oh, well, for me, I'd say one of the challenges, if you've been doing this a long time, is keeping it fresh, really staying creative. I think it's easy to get into a place where, you know, your show really works. You know, you've been working on it for years and you're doing the same thing. You know, it's easy to go on to autopilot, and sometimes you do those gigs and you're like, what did I just do? Oh, okay. I did it. Maybe just staying creative, you know, find ways to make it fresh, change your show.
Yeah. You know what I've done in the past that's kind of helped me is I'll keep the show that I've been doing for years and years, and then I'll add another show on top of it. But that another show on top of it, I'm always sweating when I do it the first, you know, 10 or 12, 15, 20 times, because I don't know what's working and what's not yet, you know, until I do it for a while. So I keep my old one and then, you know, grab another one, start working on something else.
Yeah, I think that's even a better approach, because the more material you have, the better. You have two full shows is way better than one.
All right, how about a recommended book? Do you have a recommended book for us?
Well, probably the book that I would recommend, it more for beginners than experienced professionals. And I think that most people who are listening to this podcast have already probably read this book, but I'm going to say it anyway, and because I love the book, Born Standing Up by Steve Martin.
Oh yeah. It's been recommended a couple of times and I've read it myself. It's wonderful. It's amazing. If you haven't read it, read it now.
Yeah. Read it now. Really, who hasn't read it here on this podcast? I'm sure we all have. And yeah, like you said, it's been recommended a few times, I'm sure. But for me, that's like such a great illustration of what it takes, the amount of dedication and work it takes to really be successful. Steve Martin, for me, is one of my all-time heroes.
Me too.
For comedy. I mean, like, for me, Steve Martin was the first person to make me really laugh. He's a hero for me, but it's a really educational book. If you are a beginner in performing and you have not read that book, you absolutely have to read it. And I would recommend the audio book. So to hear Steve tell it himself is even more of a treat.
I haven't heard that. I may have to.
Yeah, go back and listen to it. It's really fun. It's really fun just hearing Steve tell those stories.
And a lot of his stories revolve around Southern California, where I'm from, Knott's Berry Farm and the different places he's worked, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, he started in very humble beginnings. You know, he's working Knott's Berry Farm doing magic shows. And so, you know, there's a lot for all of us to relate to. You know, he's kind of one of us who started very humble.
Yeah.
And is now the legend.
He is truly a legend.
Yeah, Steve Martin, man. It doesn't get much better than that. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of that book.
It's a great book. All right, well, thanks, Peter, for doing my show. That was fun.
That was fun. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, John.
And no problem. Do you have some social media or something else you want to promote?
Yeah, you know, my Instagram page, at the Peter Irish. I'm posting my art, juggling videos up there. Facebook, I'm on that. My website, secondtriangle.com for my art, and my website for my show is footjuggling.com. And if you're in Rome, find me. I'll be out there on the street.
All right. And thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, spread the word. You can reach me from my Facebook page. Just shoot me out a message. And while you're there, join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests. Thank you, Peter, for spending some time. That was fun.
Thanks, John.
Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.